Fox and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Special Report. President Trump is now pausing tariffs on Mexico and Canada. Linda Kenyon at the White House.
The executive orders include an official suspension of trade tariffs on some Canadian goods. The pause until April 2nd includes cars and auto parts from Canada. The president says this will make trade more favorable for American car companies. A similar suspension of tariffs was granted for goods from Mexico.
The markets were off all day because of concerns about tariffs. The Dow finishing 427 points lower. Brian Keel of Farmers for Free Trade says the tariffs are already having an impact.
China has put 10% tariffs on U.S. soybeans, 15% tariffs on U.S. corn. That means our products are less competitive in those markets, which means we sell less of those products.
Canada's prime minister says despite the U.S. pause, his country will not lift its retaliatory tariffs. CBS News Brief, I'm Cammie McCormick.
Tune in this week to Seth Faces the Music, where I'll be playing songs about going fast. Don't blink, you might miss it. Check it out every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. on WFHR.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. Daylight Savings Time starts this weekend. It happens on Sunday at 2 a.m. Brittany Merlot tells us more.
We spring forward and move the clocks 1 hour ahead. While that means extra light in the evening, it also means losing an hour of sleep. Doctors say children and teens are especially prone to health impacts of getting less sleep. And sleep's important for kids because it helps them learn in school, manage their emotions, and have faster response times. So families should plan ahead now. Adjust bedtime. Make it about 15 minutes earlier every day before the actual time changes.
The latest Marquette University Law School poll of Wisconsin voters finds divided views on President Donald Trump and billionaire Elon Musk. Trump's approval rating is at 48% approve to 51% disapprove among Wisconsin voters. This figure is slightly higher than when Trump first occupied the White House 8 years ago. In the March 2017 poll, Trump's approval was at 41% as compared to 47% disapprove. In this year's poll, Trump's support is worse with independents, where he polled with net positive ratings in 2017, but net negative ratings now. Charles Franklin, head of the Marquette poll.
The way the coalitions are split, the way the parties are aligned, and especially the way independents are, is a little different this time, in starkly more partisan polarization.
The poll found that voters have a more negative view of Elon Musk, who has a 41% favorable to 53% unfavorable rating. Among independent voters, Musk fares even worse, with just 29% viewing him favorably to 58% unfavorable. The poll is among registered voters in Wisconsin and has a slight Republican lean in its sample. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
The Bucks down the Mavericks. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks cruise to another win at home, 137-107, past the Dallas Mavericks team missing seven other players. How did the Bucks handle themselves? Doc Rivers.
Yeah, I thought we played the right way overall. Aggressive, moved the ball, defended. They have so many guys out. You know, tough for them. Like, that's how I kept thinking that. Like, yeah, you got Klay Thompson over there, and so it's just a tough spot.
College hoops, the Badgers with a win in Minnesota, 74-67. John Blackwell led with 25 points and a career-high 11 rebounds. Marquette losing at UConn, 72-66. The game delayed for 22 minutes at the start.
I said it was a leak in the roof, and it was leaking on the baseline. You know, they talked about canceling the game if it didn't get addressed. So, you know, I told Danny we'd go across the street to the practice gym if we had to, but I'm glad we could play the game here.
That's Marquette head coach Shaka Smart with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Increasing clouds tonight, lows in the mid-teens. Clouds tomorrow morning, then turning mostly sunny for the afternoon and highs in the upper 30s. Even warmer temperatures for the weekend and into next week, highs climbing through the 40s, even some 50s. Currently 35 degrees.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
I'm very excited. It is my pleasure to welcome tonight my old pal, Dr. Kristen Lierley. I told the entire listening audience that I rub my feet together sometime when I watch TV, and I called it self-cuddling. And it's like the only thing we do where we rub our own bodies when we relax, you know.
Is it? Are you telling that to a gynecologist? Pete, come on.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Matt Nair on air.
Will Westmoreland is joining us now. He is a farmer in southwestern Missouri.
This is an 80-20 Republican area down here. You can't throw a rock without hitting a Republican. And I still know all the guys I graduated with. So I always ask, don't admit you were wrong. Just admit you were lied to. That's a lot easier to do. If you just admit you were lied to, you can get over here with us and start working to fight the problem.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pat Kreitlow.
On Friday, as usual, we will wrap up the week's big stories from a Courier newsroom perspective and a panel that includes veteran journalists and a former U.S. attorney.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6. Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Welcome, everybody, to Midday Magazine for this Thursday, March 6, 2025. Have your host, James J. Mailov, here. I am joined by Sally Kistner from Savor the Arts and the Arts Council. Sally, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you, Sally. You brought a friend. We have with us Michael Cavanaugh. Michael is going to be joining us here in town real soon with the music of Billy Joel and Elton John. That show is going to be coming up Thursday, March 20th, over at the Performing Arts Center. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing great. Happy to be here.
Thanks a lot for the time, man. Really appreciate it. Sally and I were joking in our pregame. We cannot imagine how busy you are. So just taking the time to talk to us and our audience, we really appreciate. Michael, we like to really get to know people around here, so I always like to begin with an origin story. Where are you from? Tell us a little bit about your background.
I grew up in the suburbs of Cleveland, Ohio. And, my parents bought a piano when I was 7 years old, and I attacked it the first day we had it. I didn't know what I was doing, but I was all over the thing. And by the time I was in fifth grade, I had my first little band. I played in the school talent show, and the girls screamed. And that made me stop and say, wait a second. I think I'm onto something here. Because I knew there was no other way I would ever make a girl scream other than playing music. So I decided to stick with it. And, when I was 12 years old, I played in my first nightclub, which is crazy. And by the time I was 13, I was a regular. I was playing 3-4 nights a week. All throughout my teens, it was a pretty crazy time. And luckily, I've never been the type of kid who got in trouble, so I never got into all the craziness that I saw around me. It's been what I've done my whole life. You know, I got married and we moved to Florida, and I worked in a piano bar, and then I moved to Las Vegas, worked in another piano bar, a dueling piano bar. And to make a very long story short, I got to know Billy Joel's manager, and his name is Max, and Max decided to surprise me and bring Billy Joel to hear me in the piano bar in Vegas, which nearly gave me a heart attack, obviously. It was crazy, right? But it turned out great, because that was the reason I got to go to Broadway and star in Billy Joel's, you know, big musical on Broadway called Moving Out. Changed my life.
I cannot wait to get more into that with you. Before then, though, I do want to mention first, one of the things that we love in these interviews, getting to talk to artists like yourself, Michael, is hearing about those early, that first hit of applause, or that first scream or laugh or something they get. I'm an actor, and I've been acting since I was a kid, but the first thing that I ever did like that was actually a breakdancing thing with a buddy of mine. And there was like 20 Ooh. People, but they clapped, and I can hear it to this day. I can still hear those claps. There's something about that, and I think for other artists really hear that and immediately just nod their head, because it's not about the, I love the attention so much as, oh, they liked it. Oh, they liked what I did. Yeah. Do you think it's more of that than it is just some, I'm sure for every artist, it might be a little bit different, but when it comes right down to it, for a lot of us that do this as a grind and everything, it's really about, oh, they liked it.
Yes, I completely agree, because when I'm not on stage, I basically blend it into the wallpaper, you know, it's two different personas. Like my wife and I, we go to church, and my wife knows everybody, and I'm Karen's husband, and it's great. But then they see me on stage, and like, what happened to you? They're like, what is going on? And not that I'm, you know, not that I'm swinging on a trapeze or anything, but I do take on a different persona. And it is true. I appreciate when they're hooting and hollering over what I, over what we just did on stage. That's a big deal to me. And then when I, you know, after the show, if I go to a restaurant somewhere, I love to go somewhere where it's quiet and, you know, then I go back to just being your everyday guy.
Michael, you mentioned playing piano at a young age. Were there any other instruments you picked up along the way or early on that helped you get better at the craft?
Yes. The first instrument I wanted to play was drums. I still think to this day I was probably born to be a drummer. Now, the piano thing worked out very well. But, but I was young. I remember I was like 5 years old, and my parents bought me a snare drum, and I banged on that thing nonstop, and then one day it magically disappeared. I'm still not sure I'm buying the story my mom tells me about that. But so then they got the piano, and the thing that's great about a piano, and I tell a lot of young musicians this, no matter what instrument you play, what's great about a piano is you're looking at your hands, you're really seeing what's going on. You get a good picture of all the notes you're playing and the scales and everything else. Whereas on guitar, because I've been playing guitar now since I was 10, I've been playing guitar for a very long time. But I play a bunch of instruments. People ask me all the time, what instrument do you play? And I say, whatever it takes to get the gig. piano's home, though, for sure. Guitar is a close second. But, you know, on guitar, sometimes you can think about shapes you're making and you're not really thinking about the notes. I know so many great players, guitar players, bass players, and you ask them to play a certain note on the fretboard and they fumble through it. Like, whoa, where's the A? Where's the C? But when they get on stage, and it's funny because these same guys can play a song they've never heard before. It's just like their hands know where to go, but they don't really know what they're playing. This is just a few of them that I know. Whereas on the piano, you kind of have to know what you're playing because you're looking right at it. You know, that's why I think it's such a good place to start.
I appreciate that. One of the things we love to do with this interview, Sally and I and Eric, when he's here with us, is certainly, you know, promoting you, talking about Savor the Arts, promoting the arts in our area, but also encouraging young artists and giving them insight, giving them some tips or anything they might need to get to the next level and everything. That's why we have so many of the, you know, chances for these kids to meet artists and things like that. So really do appreciate that insight. I was looking through your resume, did my homework for this interview. I have heard of you before and certainly I've listened to you before and everything, Michael. I've been a fan of yours for a while, actually.
Thanks.
But one of the things I got to be honest with you, I had not come across before is the comment that was there and something you mentioned earlier, you being handpicked by Billy Joel to star in a hit Broadway, the hit Broadway Moving Out. Michael, your resume is impressive. I really feel like you could save some time. All you need is that. That's all you need on your resume, man. You can just save some time, save some ink. I was chosen by Billy Joel to play Billy Joel. I don't know how anybody tops that. What did that feel like, man?
Well, it was crazy because, you know, Billy was and is, you know, he's my musical hero. He really is. Now, I'm also hugely influenced by Elton John, hugely by the Beatles. But if I had to pick one, Billy Joel was. When my dad played me Billy Joel the first time, it was like, whoa, stop everything. This is, what is going on here? I used to camp out in the snow to buy tickets to his shows. And I remember being a teenager saying, and I was probably just being a cocky teenager. I would say, I'm not only going to meet Billy Joel, I'm going to know him someday. And I used to say that and people are like, what are you talking about? And I was a kid from Cleveland. I didn't really know what I was talking about. And then when it actually happened, it was crazy. And when it was, you know, when he's in the piano bar and he's watching me and I actually don't melt down, that was a huge thing too. Cause sometimes that can make or break somebody, how they can, you know, when that spotlight gets turned on, are you ready to go? Cause I felt like I was preparing for that moment my whole life.
Yeah.
And fortunately, I held it together and it turned out to be a great thing. And Billy became a friend. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, I think you nailed the gig, man. Yeah, you definitely did. When it comes to doing this this performance that you're doing right now, this amazing tour that you have going on, that Pollster ranked this show in the top 50 touring acts shows over the last 2 years. Understandable, especially with what you just explained to us about choosing some Billy Joel. What made you decide to add on Elton John, as if doing a whole Billy Joel show wouldn't be enough? No, let's just go ahead and put on another legend on there onto my plate. How did you come to that decision? Certainly, those two touring together certainly might have played a bit of an influence, but for you to do that, that seems like to take on a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, when they toured together, I remember the first time I saw that was, I think it was in 1998. I was living in Florida at the time, and the Tampa Stadium. I was so blown away. When I first heard they were going to tour together, I couldn't believe it was even real. Because Elton was, like I said, also very, very big in my house. Very, very big in my house. So it started with, after moving out, I started performing with a lot of symphony orchestras, and I still do that to this day. And we started with our Music of Billy Joel show, and then they said, I started with the Indianapolis Symphony, but I've been with well over 100 orchestras all over the world, from California to Malaysia, all over the place. And when it came time for our second show, we thought, well, it's an obvious choice to go with the music of Elton John, another piano player. They toured together, another hero of mine. So we did that. And when we decided to put together our Performing Arts Center shows which is what we're doing right now, we decided, you know, let's cast a big net, because usually people that are Billy fans are also Elton John fans. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes I will say that the challenging part is these two legends have so many songs that for me to play all their hits, I think I'd be up there for 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you, when you can hit the audience between the eyes on every song, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
When you're following Scenes from an Italian Restaurant, with Benny and the Jets, and then you're doing, New York State of Mind, and then you're doing Rocket Man. I mean, it's like you're hitting.
I can only imagine. And Michael, you just set me up perfectly. On my list here, my very next question was, how do you choose from these two libraries? Just choosing from one would feel like it was difficult, let alone choosing from both. You're such a good guest. You already answered two of my questions kind of already, because I was curious if you did the Scenes from Italian Restaurant. That's my favorite Billy Joel song, like top 10 favorite song of all time. I love that song. So that's cool to hear you do that.
I love that song too. That one is, you know, it's funny because it was never a radio hit. Mm-hmm. Billy Joel told his own audience, it's probably 15 years ago, what songs do people want to hear most on the tour? Number one was Piano Man. Number two was Scenes from an Italian Restaurant. That song is it's like a masterpiece. I mean, it really is. I played that song so many times in my life, and I still love it every time. I do.
It's like three songs in one. There's like three different songs going on. It's incredible work. It really. I think one thing about Billy Joel that doesn't get enough credit is his songwriting and his musical production and everything. He's great voice, great piano player, obviously, but that part doesn't get, you know. And that's one thing I noticed listening to you. I didn't expect this part, Michael. Listening to you gave me even more appreciation of these guys in many different ways, and just I felt like I could understand their body of work a little bit differently, from a different perspective. While you do an amazing job, you do an amazing job with these songs. One of the other things that I wanted to ask you about, I'll get to in a moment. But you're not an impersonator up there. You're not up there in a Billy Joel circa 1980. You're not sitting up there in one of Elton's crazy outfits or something like that.
No duck suit.
Which is a little unfortunate, I guess. But no, I'm kidding.
Well,
you can rock it. I bet.
People have asked me. People have said, "Where's the duck suit?" You know, I'm like, well, there's a lot of guys out there who do that. There are guys.
Sure,
I live in Las Vegas now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's impersonators everywhere, right? They put on the duck suit. They put on the Dodgers thing. They do the whole thing. And that's fine. I've never really saw myself as that kind of guy. I don't try to impersonate Billy Joel or Elton John or anyone else. But there are times when people will say, "I close my eyes and you sound just like him." Moments. And it's probably only because this music is in my blood, and maybe it comes out at times the way it went in. But at the same time, I'm not trying to copy them. But I certainly don't want to mess up a good thing. I want to give the songs their due. If a Billy Joel fan shows up and they want to hear me play "Angry Young Man," or seen to a Italian restaurant, I'm gonna smoke that thing the same way Billy does. You know, yeah. I'm gonna give it everything I have. But I remember when Billy's daughter came to see Moving Out, Alexa, I was so nervous. I was just as nervous for her to watch me as her dad, I think, because I just had these visions of her coming up to me saying, "Who do you think you are? Play my dad's
yeah,
music."
Yeah.
And she was amazing. Like, she came up, she gave me the biggest hug. She said, "You made it your own." She said, I love it. I love the way you play these songs." And that was really an awesome moment, you know. That
I want to come back to that.
I just said her name, and the Alexa in my room just started talking to me. I had to walk up.
That poor kid, I imagine she gets a lad a lot. We're speaking with Michael Cavanaugh right now. And Michael, when it did come to choosing the songs, how did that go? How would that process work?
So are you talking about my show?
Yeah, for your show, choosing the particular songs you'd be playing from both of these gigantic libraries, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, it changes all the time. So
wow.
I try to get a read. If I'm in anywhere in New York, we're going to play New York State of Mind. If I'm in L.A., we may, but we may not. Like, I mean, they're so, like, I might think, okay, we're in L.A., maybe I'm going to prioritize Uptown Girl over, because there's a lot of young people at the show, and they know Uptown Girl. I mean, everybody knows Uptown Girl, right?
Yeah, but I know what you
I
mean.
I think a lot about where I am. I mean, there's certain songs that are always going to be there. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I leave the stage without playing Piano Man, they're probably not going to be too happy. you know, if I don't do Benny and the Jets, they're going to have something to say about that. But it is challenging. I do write a different set list for every show. I do. So there's definitely some wiggle room, and sometimes I'll have the audience vote sometimes. Now, usually if we do that, I'm not going to, because if I say, "What would you rather hear, Crocodile Rock or I'm Still Standing?" Well, people are just going to be screaming all over the place,
sure,
right?
Sure, sure.
So sometimes we'll do it through a text message, and, you know, I'm not going to put those two songs up against each other because they're both two massive of songs. But if I take a song like, I'll say Stiletto, which I don't know if you know the song Stiletto. It's one of my favorite Billy Joel songs.
Yeah, it's good.
It's more of an album cut, but the diehards love it. If I put that up against Honesty, Honesty's probably going to win, but you never know.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many songs to pick from.
It's such a fun way to do it. And I got to say, I don't know how I look to Sally, but my eyes are wide. I'm so impressed by that, man. Most people that I talk to do anything similar to what you're doing, it's a set thing every night. That's what it is. Nothing against that. Just that's what they do. The fact that you and your band, your team, you guys are able to do that, that is so impressive to me. I have no follow-up question. That's really great.
Yeah, I'm kind of like Peyton Manning at the line. I'm like, Omaha.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Michael,
I do that all the time. Yeah.
Before we let you go, I did want to note one thing. I in reading everything, one of the comments that I came across I thought was so key. Kavanaugh is no impersonator, but the similarities between their Billy Joel's and Kavanaugh's styles are not to be missed. I thought that really nailed what you do so well, and so much of what we've been talking about here. You are just nailing these songs and hitting them and bringing us, whether it's back to the first time we heard them or for some the first time they're going to hear it in the first time of many. For you, what does it mean to be able to bring these songs out there and do that, and sometimes even to a whole new generation?
Bill, I tell you, the whole new generation thing really is amazing to me. I perform for all different ages, you know, and when a young person, whether they're a college kid or a high school kid or a teenager, and sometimes they actually say, "I'm a huge Billy Joel or a huge Elton John fan, and I know all these songs," or sometimes they say, "I've never heard these songs before, and I'm going right. I've already gone on Spotify, and I've gotten all the, I'm going to listen to this nonstop." It's important. It's really important to me because this music really shaped who I am as a musician, a performer, and even a songwriter. Like, it's shaped who I am with what I do with my career, what I do every day. So it's very important to me.
It's great to hear. Michael, I cannot thank you enough for the time. We're looking forward to welcoming you into town. We're going to make sure you have a full crowd. Again, thank you for the time. If you do happen to talk to Mr. Joel, please tell my mother she loves him. Sorry, I had to say my Jewish mother in the back of my head. I had to.
That's awesome. Yeah.
No, thank you, man. It was great to get to meet you and talk to you. Have a great safe travels out there, and we'll talk soon.
Awesome, guys. Thanks so much.
Wonderful conversation with Mr. Michael Cavanaugh, a great guy. We're going to have in our podcast links to Michael's website along with Savor the Arts and some of the other chances if you want to get a little preview of Mr. Cavanaugh and his great work. Sally, how did you come across him?
Actually, I saw a video of him and I had to see him. And so I kept watching for where he was performing. And he was at the Wausau Grand Theater. So I went to see him. First time I saw him, I absolutely loved him, but I had to see him one more time because he's a little on the expensive side.
Oh,
he's,
yeah, yeah.
You know, he's very talented.
Mm-hmm.
So after I saw him the second time, I approached our Wisconsin Presenters Network folks, and we put a routing together to make it more reasonably priced for him, for us, yeah. for everybody.
Very cool.
So I think we had 5 or 6 in the state.
Wow, very
for the
cool.
routing.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
Yeah.
And a thank you to everybody that worked so hard to make this happen and get him here and him and his team, because this is an incredible talent coming to town, and it's 5 minutes away, Sally. Like, wherever you're listening to us, it's pretty much 5 minutes away. Sally, let's give people the details of the show.
You bet. Thursday, March 20th at 7:30 at the Performing Arts Center. Tickets are $54 for adults and $10 for students. You can get them at savorthearts.com 24/7 or give us a call 715-424-2787 or stop by and see us 1048 Street South, Suite 101. And our office hours are Monday through Thursday, 10 to 2:30.
And keep on listening to our morning show, everybody. Sally gave us a pair of tickets to give away, so we're going to be giving away a pair on the morning show. Be listening for that. And get your tickets. Don't wait. If you win the tickets, then you just got two extras. You can bring two more friends or something.
Exactly.
Get those tickets. They are not going to stay there very long. We don't get talents like this every day around here, so this is going to be pretty cool. We cannot wait for it. I did a mean thing here, Sally. I'm sorry, but I saved enough time to do this to you. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I did mine earlier. Scenes from an Italian Restaurant. Do you have a favorite Billy Joel song? I got to ask the tough question, Sally. It's a tough one, I know.
I'm Still Standing. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah. Good one.
It's got to be right toward the top.
That's a good one. Thank you, Sally, for not only everything you and Savor the Arts do around our community. Setting up this interview with Michael was not easy. I appreciate you and Pam and everybody working together on this one. And Seth, our producer, and our sound and everything. Nice work.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Remember, everybody, get those tickets at savorthearts.com. Savorthearts.com. Be listening. We'll be giving away a pair right here at WFHR, locally grown radio.
Judge Brad Schimmel is an anti-choice politician whose positions are too extreme for Wisconsin women. He supports a pre-Civil War law that bans abortion. But don't take our word for it. Hear it in his own words.
1849, ban on abortions. Which, by the way, what is squat about that law?
The 1849 abortion ban provides no exceptions for rape or incest.
What is squat about that law?
The 1849 law criminalizes doctors and their patients.
What is squat about that law?
Brad Schimmel supports an 1849 law to ban abortion with no exceptions. Tell Brad Schimmel, extreme politics don't belong on Wisconsin's Supreme Court. Call 262-548-7548. That's 262-548-7548. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Incorporated.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Fear you're missing out when you miss our conversations on air? You can always join the discussion on our social media channels. Find Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also find social media for specific shows and hosts on our website. Go to civicmedia.us.
The Morning Show on WFHR. It's serious comedy.
Blue Monday has been a thing ever since a British psychologist came up with it 20 years ago.
Today is the day to rewrite the lyrics to Blue Christmas.
Yes, yes, yes.
I'll have a Blue Monday when it's cold.
Nice. Nice. That is my new favorite thing.
Yes.
Right there. That was awesome.
See you in the bumpers.
Weekdays from 8 to 10, right here on Locally Grown Radio.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. There's been another death at the Waupun Correctional Institution. Lisa Hale has the story.
Another inmate has died at Waupun Correctional Institution. 23-year-old Damian Evans died Tuesday. This is the seventh death at the prison in 2 years. Waupun Mayor Ron Bishop says drug smuggling continues to be an issue at the prison. Less than a year ago, former warden Randall Hepp was charged with misconduct and 8 of his staff were charged with felony inmate abuse. Governor Tony Evers is pushing a $500 million prison reform plan that includes repurposing the Waupun prison, the oldest in the state, as a medium security facility with vocational training for inmates.
No errors were found in an audit of Wisconsin's voting machines. Here's Jimmy Kuska.
The Wisconsin Elections Commission said that an audit of the state's voting machines found that there were no votes counted incorrectly, changed, or missed. The audit's results also showed that no voting machine or software had been hacked or tampered with. The post-election audit involved 336 randomly selected municipalities and over 327,000 ballots, or about 10% of all ballots cast in the 2024 election. It was the largest post-election audit ever done in the state of Wisconsin. The audits are required by statute.
The audit of voting machines is more heavily scrutinized since President Donald Trump and his supporters claimed without proof that the 2020 election had widespread election fraud. The Nakusa Port Edwards Knights of Columbus drive-through fish fry begins tomorrow. You can get beer-battered fried cod with your choice of baked potato or potato salad, coleslaw, dinner roll, and dessert for just $13. It's from 3 to 6 p.m. at Sacred Heart Parish in Nakusa. They'll be having these drive-through fish fries every Friday until April 11th. Enter on 7th Street and follow the signs. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. The tabloids love to stir up trouble and are continuing to do so following last week's Oscars broadcast. After Kieran Culkin won Best Supporting Actor for his role in A Real Pain, cameras caught Edward Norton, who also was nominated for his role in A Complete Unknown, leaning over and saying the F word to his wife. It's not 100% clear what he said or if he was referring to the fact that he lost or if he's the most awkward romantic ever. Margaret Qualley's star is on the rise after a small but star-making role in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and playing opposite Demi Moore in this year's Oscar-nominated Substance, the world is pretty much her oyster. After a really unnecessary James Bond music tribute at the Oscars last week, which happened just in time as Bond was killed off 2 years ago, fans are now saying they hope the daughter of Andy McDowell becomes a Bond girl. Quite a leap. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Increasing clouds tonight, lows in the mid-teens. Clouds tomorrow morning, then turning mostly sunny for the afternoon and highs in the upper 30s. Even warmer temperatures for the weekend and into next week, highs climbing through the 40s, even some 50s. Currently, it's 37.
My name is Ariel. When I arrived in the U.S. at 19, I struggled to find job opportunities without my high school diploma. My entire life changed when I took a chance and got my high school diploma at age 22. Everything I have, my education, my career, my marriage, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and my teachers. They were with me every step of the way, helping with my English and math, making sure I pushed through all the challenges.
Ariel, your success proves that what I'm doing as a teacher has real meaning.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
Education was the key that unlocked all my opportunities.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker.
Join me as we find out what happened to USAID with Christina Dry, speechwriter and communications analyst for the agency.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker, Saturdays at 2, Sundays at 1 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Welcome, everybody, to Midday Magazine for this Thursday, March 6, 2025. Have your host, James J. Mailoff, here, and welcoming into the studio our good friend, Anna James Mitchell. She is a natural resource educator with UW-Madison Extension Wood County. Anna, good to have you with us.
Good to be here, James.
Thanks so much for making the time today. I wanted to get going here and everything, and I didn't even ask how you're doing and if you're settled in and everything. I appreciate you being able to just jump right in.
Yeah, of course.
And I appreciate the topic today. As usual, you bring in a topic that we don't get to talk nearly about enough. Now, this one is a little more common, but it happens to be one of my favorite topics in the world,
okay.
Maple syrup. I love maple syrup. It's something that one of those things that I want to grow my, or grow, you know, make my own someday and all those things. So I was very excited to dive into this topic with you.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I figured it would be a timely topic given that I think some folks are thinking about tapping trees, making maple syrup. It's Wisconsin tradition. Wisconsin just has a super rich history with maple syrup.
A very rich and deep history. And yes. I like what you did there with the rich. but it's such a deep history. This goes back to Native American roots.
Yeah, it does. So Native Americans in Wisconsin and other states in the upper Midwest use maple syrup as medicine, food, trade goods, and gifts. And while I was doing a little research on the topic, I found that Dr. Susan Deborah Wade, she did her dissertation on the relationship with Native Americans, indigenous people, and maple syrup. And one interesting thing that I found in her dissertation was that indigenous women in Wisconsin would trade maple sugar and other goods with the fur trading companies. Mm. So I thought that that was just an interesting, you know, dynamic with maple syrup being the good.
Probably led to the popularity of maple syrup in other areas. It's spreading to those areas and everything, then bringing those goods over there. And I don't think many of us, as much as I know about maple syrup, I don't think many of us knew that it had medicine ties to
it. Yeah, I couldn't find a lot of information on the medicinal ties to it, other than that it was mentioned as something that the indigenous people used.
Could have even been a sweetener for you know, certain medicines that were more bitter or something like that.
It could have been. That's a very good observation. Yeah. And maple syrup, I mean, in early days was a primary sweetener for pioneer homes. So for most of the 1800s, pioneer homes would use maple syrup as sweetener because the import costs and the cost of cane sugar was so expensive.
So that is really interesting.
Yeah, it is. So if we fast forward to modern day history, maple syrup still plays a really large role in Wisconsin's culture and economy. In fact, the state is currently the fourth in nation's maple syrup production.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I don't know if many knew that.
Yep, I didn't.
Figured it was high on the list. Didn't know if it was top five. That's really cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. And in 2024, Wisconsin produced 458,000 gallons of maple syrup. And the 2022 crop was valued at $14 million. That's a lot of money in our economy.
I don't like to ask questions that throw at you or anything, but I wonder if that includes, you know, you're on the side of the road, your mom and pop maple syrup sellers and some of that. And
yeah. So what I was finding, I can't remember where the report was from, but it did have those different, like, whatever scale vendors,
sure,
maple syrup vendors, it did account for that cost.
Very cool.
So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. And some of the better maple syrup you get is usually like that. It's so good.
Yes, it is. Not the stuff you get off the shelves at the grocery store, right?
Nope.
When I said the maple syrup crop, that's correct. Mm-hmm. Maple syrup is actually considered a production in agricultural activity by the Wisconsin Department of Revenue. And woodlands where sap is collected may be assessed as agricultural use value for property taxes and saving producers money. So I thought that was really interesting that it is actually considered a crop here in Wisconsin.
It's very cool. Even a little bit more of encouragement to people out there to you know, look into doing this.
Yeah. And Wisconsin, you know, there's a lot of for lack of better terms, untapped sources for maple syrup in Wisconsin. So our state has 3.7 million acres of maple forests, and only a small fraction of those, less than 0.5%, are currently being used for maple syrup production. Wow. So as the demand for maple syrup continues to grow nationally and internationally, there's a greater potential for growth in the industry.
So even more reason for people to kind of get out there and start tapping those trees and start doing this.
It's super interesting. There are thousands of maple syrup producers in the state of Wisconsin. And, you know, we touched on this. You have your small mom and pop. You have maple syrup producers that are at larger scale. So those producers can range from hobbyists who tap only a couple of trees in their yards to those large scale full-time businesses that makes maple syrup from tens of thousands of trees. So a majority of the producers here in Wisconsin are small, small scale producers that maybe tap a couple of hundred of trees.
Wow. Not that it necessarily is exactly what you're focusing on here, but this brings to mind to me when you mentioned the thousands of growers, and every one of these maple syrups is going to taste a little bit different than the other and everything, and how creative that is.
Yeah.
I don't think I, even as a creative, think about that very often, the creative process in ag industry and in things like this. If you are somebody, you know, late to this, if you will, and you wanted to start doing this, how you would make it different than the others.
Yeah.
The creative part of that. And I just find that really cool. I think that's really interesting. And it also speaks to, this is another thing that I love when happens in life. You know, everybody's got their favorite maple syrup and none of us are wrong. Like it's, you know, we all got our favorites and everybody's a little bit different. And I think that just speaks to also why there's so many of these growers, people growing these crops.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting. And I think another really cool thing about maple syrup production is that it's a super sustainable agricultural industry or source, right? So the most commonly tapped trees in Wisconsin are sugar maple, red maple, and silver maple, but other species can produce syrup as well. So in fact, syrup can be made from other trees besides maple trees. So you can have birch trees, walnuts, sycamore, and beech trees, but maple syrup, it comes in the name. The maple trees are the most common source for tapping to get maple syrup.
Anna, to ask a city boy question, are you going to get a different flavor from different trees?
Yeah,
you will. It seems like you would. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting.
Yep. So it's really interesting. And I was learning a lot while digging into this only because my husband and I are tapping trees for our first time this year. So this was a really relevant topic for my learning experience and for the audience too. Like I had said, maple syrup production is one of the only agricultural crops that comes from a native ecosystem. And it's a very sustainable industry since maple trees can be tapped year after year, decades and even centuries. I was reading that there's a couple of trees in Maine that a family has been tapping for over 200 years.
Wow.
I thought that was super cool.
That's amazing. And I cannot imagine what that tastes like.
I
got to try that.
Yeah.
I would love to try that.
That would be really cool.
That's really cool, though. Again, another thing that I don't think a lot of us knew about this process, that could be a thing. It makes sense when you take a step back and think about it in the age of trees and some of this, but not something we would have thought of when we're, you know, pouring it on our pancakes or something.
Right. Yep. And you know, supporting sustainable industries is always really valuable. So I'm going to get into a little bit of the details of how to make maple syrup. So we'll start with a sugar bush, which is a forest stand. So a stand of trees, right, in a forest that's dominated by maple trees. And that's the maple trees are where the sugary sap is collected for maple syrup production. So the forests are natural ecosystems that provide habitat for wildlife, opportunities for recreation, and other ecosystem services like air filtration, soil stabilization, and water purification. So maple syrup producers don't plant the trees, right? They're managing the forest and maintaining the natural ecosystem and then getting the goods of maple syrup from that tree.
Yeah.
So
very cool.
It's really interesting.
Yeah, very. That's it. So getting into the basics of this, that's kind of like leading us into that.
Right.
Like the basics of the syrup production itself and some of that.
Yep. Wow. So this is just a very high level view of how maple syrup is made. Because I don't know who knows this information. So I thought it would be really cool to share.
I'm taking notes over here.
So the first step of making maple syrup is actually tapping the trees. So in January or February, maple producers start drilling holes into their trees and they'll insert taps. So there's specifications on which trees can be tapped, and generally they're looking for trees that are about 40 years old because they're about 10 to 12 inches in diameter. So those trees are large enough to tap. And then the second step is allowing the sap to flow from the trees, right? Maple syrup comes from sap. So in summer, the trees will generate sugar through photosynthesis, and the sugar content then allows the tree's cells to breathe. It promotes its growth, and it accumulates in its roots during the winter as storage, right? So that sugar is created by photosynthesis and stored as an energy source. So when spring comes and the temperatures start to vary between night and day, sap begins to flow up and down the tree, which I thought was really cool. So on warm daytime temperatures, the warm daytime temperatures in spring causes the tree's woods to expand, and the sap in the branches are put under a really strong amount of pressure, which makes it flow down towards the trunk. So if a tree is tapped, the sap that is flowing down towards the trunk goes through the tap and is collected in the buckets. And then in the evenings or in the nighttime during spring, spring days, you know, that nighttime, it kind of gets below freezing. When that happens, the wood contracts and squeezes off the flow, and then more sap will rush up the tree from the storage and the roots. So it's like just a cycle that's happening within the tree, and that all occurs because of the previous summer's photosynthesis. So it's a really cool cycle.
It's interesting, too, that this is a cycle that would exist even without us doing this, which is always kind of cool to me, similar to bees and honey and some of these things where we've kind of found our our way to insert ourselves into Mother Nature and to find our resources, if you, you know, and anything we might need there. One thing I want to just go back to for a second in the first steps of this. The idea that a tree had to be certain height or weight or size and age. Again, another thing that I don't think a lot of us knew going into this conversation. That's really interesting, too.
Yeah. You know, and I couldn't find the exact reasoning why, but I just thought that it was really interesting to put that little fact in there. Like 40 years old, that's, we're looking for a tree that's 40 years old to tap, which I thought was really cool.
We're speaking with Anna James Mitchell from UW Extension, and now we get to harvest. Now we get to harvest that sap.
Yeah. So when harvesting, when the maple syrup producers get to harvest time, they'll catch the sap in the pails that hang in the trees. If that's generally like the smaller scale producers will use pails. If you're at the larger scale, what a lot of producers will do is they'll connect tubing systems from tap trees to tap trees, and then they'll use gravity to drain the sap to a central location. And I'll never forget the first time I saw this. I was out in the middle of nowhere, and there was just a stand of trees with this blue tubing going all throughout it. I was like, I've seen a lot of things, but I've never seen this. I was really confused by what it was.
A little jarring at first.
And then it clicked. Those are maple trees. It must be for maple syrup production. So after harvesting the sap, the maple syrup producers will create maple syrup through the spectacular process of evaporation. So sap is made mostly of water and a small amount of sugar. In fact, it's actually about 2% sugar and the rest is water. So in order to get syrup, producers will boil the sap, which causes the water to evaporate while the sugars become denser. Then there's chemical reactions in the boiling process that caramelize the sugars and creates that maple flavor and develops the color.
Wow. That's where the color comes from. Okay. All right. Wow.
So it's all chemical reaction. And then the syrup is filtered, and the producers will remove any remaining minerals that might settle out. And then syrup can be graded to industry standards. So basically means they're going to look at the color of the syrup and fitting it into a category based on how much light passes through the syrup. So there's like an actual science behind this that I had no idea behind. And there's actually four categories of flavoring or color that syrup can be categorized as. So the first is a golden delicate flavor, an amber rich flavor, a dark robust flavor, and a very dark strong flavor. So I've never taken the time to consider what flavor my maple syrup is other than maple syrup flavor.
Yeah, yeah, same. So that is wild, and I've got to look into that more. I want to know the differences of those things, and if I can notice a difference in tasting
maple syrup
them and
testing.
Stuff. Yes, I'm going to have to do it. I have to. This is homework. This is part of
it
my
is.
Job. I have to do it. when it comes to the effort of this too, there's an effort that goes into doing this, and it's such a reward based thing. I feel it feels like.
Yeah, it is a big reward, right? And a lot of effort to get to the end product. In fact, I thought this was really mind-boggling. It takes 40 gallons of sap to make 1 gallon of maple syrup.
That's incredible. That's incredible. Wow.
Yeah. So that's a lot of effort for 1 gallon of maple syrup.
It really is. This has been so much fun, Anna. I've really been enjoying this, and I'm positive the audience has too. We've got a good 4 or 5 minutes left.
Yeah.
What I wanted to do is ask you a couple of real quick questions. And one of them, I appreciate you sharing that your husband, you're kind of getting into this world a little bit. When you were doing your homework for this interview or for, doing even some of the studying that you did to do that with your husband and stuff, did you notice any, I don't know how else to put this, evolution to this? I always find it interesting for everything that tomorrow there's a new way of doing this and tomorrow there's a new way of doing that. We're still changing tires the way we always have. That process hasn't really evolved. We're still doing it the same way we did, our parents did and their parents did.
Yeah.
With throughout you kind of giving us the history and the process of this, I'm not hearing a lot of evolution to that. I'm hearing we kind of just do this the way we've always done it, which is cool, I think. There's no right or wrong thing here. I just thought that was interesting. Did you notice any changes or,
Yeah, so I would say innovations to the system. So, historically and most commonly, your smaller scale producers will collect sap in buckets and then boil it. Some people use, which we're planning to use, is like a turkey fryer to boil the sap, to boil the water off the sap. Or they'll do it in cast iron over an open fire. But then you have your large scale producers that are converting reverse osmosis systems, which are for water purification. Mm-hmm. They're using the reverse osmosis systems at the larger scale for evaporation and creating syrup. So, I mean, if you think about it, that's innovation within the system. It's not change. They're still... The science, the basics are still there, right? They're still evaporating the water content out of the syrup or out of the sap, but they're just doing it in a different way. So there has been evolution in the process, which I thought was really cool.
That is. That really is. When it came to things that surprised you with this research, was there anything that really stood out to you like, wow, I didn't know that. That was fascinating. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I think I had never thought about... maple syrup production being as sustainable as it is. It just never dawned on me. And then as I started digging into it and thinking about it, I was like, wow, that is actually really cool. We're using a natural ecosystem in one of the many ways that it can be utilized, and we're not really disturbing it at all, and it's still there as a natural habitat, part of the ecosystem, and we're just maintaining it and making it healthy too.
See, we've been doing this a while. You did touch on something I thought was really cool that kind of I hadn't thought of, but really popped in my head as you were describing and talking about some of the process of this. We're able to do this and the tree is fine.
Yeah.
The tree is perfectly fine doing its thing. That's such a great, if you had to give people an example of humanity and nature coexisting and working together, this would be one of the better examples you could give of it.
Yeah, symbiotic relationship.
Yeah, it's just really cool. This is very cool. And something that I don't think we take the time for very often to think of. I know for me, there's no way I'm not having breakfast or dinner tonight. I'll be honest with everybody. After this conversation, it's just humanly impossible. It's not going to happen. But while I'm doing that, pouring on my waffles or whatever I am, I will be thinking about this. I don't think that there will be many times going forward I won't think about some of the stuff we talked about. One of the other things I thought was really cool, and I love to give Wisconsinites points to be proud of. Years ago, I found out doing midday interviews how much ginseng was an import here, and I did not know that beforehand. I think we got some people some new information there as far as taking some pride in something in maple syrup.
I hope so.
It's something that I think most Wisconsinites have a local love for or a respect for or understand how big it is maybe locally, but to see it nationally being ranked fourth.
Yeah.
That's impressive. And that's a big tip of the hat to our ag industry.
It is. Yeah, definitely. And just a big encouragement to any of the listeners. I just support your local maple syrup producers. You know, instead of buying the generic brand off the, you know, shelf at the grocery store, which holds its place, but, you know, spend a couple more dollars and support your local maple syrup producers.
I second that. I do want to give this, though, with a little bit of a public service announcement to the audience. When you do have that maple syrup, you will not go back.
No.
There is no going back to the store-bought stuff. It's just impossible. There's a place for everything, but that stuff there, especially you're looking for that red label, made in Wisconsin label and everything. The only thing that makes that maple syrup taste sweeter is knowing that it is locally sourced.
Yeah.
Locally, that you're supporting local.
Yes.
Anna, you guys are doing something over Extension. You got a program for maple syrup over there.
Yeah, we have a maple syrup program, which is really interesting. There's a lot of wonderful educational videos and information. It's more geared towards folks who have never grown maple or who have never produced maple syrup, and they're interested in getting into it. So if this is something of interest to you, you want to learn more, I would highly encourage you to visit the UW Extension Maple Syrup program site. Their website is maple.extension.wisc.edu. Like I said, a ton of great videos to get you started and a ton of great information on that website.
I have it bookmarked.
Yeah, okay, good.
I have put it aside already. And Anna, if people have follow-up questions for you and like to know more, how can they reach you?
Yeah, you can stop by the Wood County Extension office or you can email me at anna.m.james@wisc.edu.
Always a blast hanging out with you. Thank you so much, Anna. I appreciate you being able to make the time today. We'll talk soon.
Yep.
Well, and more Midday Magazine coming up for you right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Brian Lomax, defend the vote.
The SAVE Act will make it harder for all Americans to vote. Now you need a passport. Wisconsin specific, 5 million people don't have a passport. Now it's $130 per passport.
Even if you can afford to get a passport, that is a months-long process. Unless you planned a year ahead, you're not going to be able to vote.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Albaugh Show.
Think about how many people in our communities, our friends, our families, our neighbors, our postal workers, carriers, people that work at our Veterans Affairs hospitals, USDA. Here's what Marjorie Taylor Greene, Donald Trump's lieutenant, thinks of all the people I just mentioned.
Federal employees do not deserve their jobs.
That's what Donald Trump and MAGA believe if you are a federal worker.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. This is locally grown radio, WFHR. Maggie Dawn.
At the top of the show, I'll be joined by the University of Wisconsin-Madison professor Yoshiko Herrera to discuss the evolving situation in Ukraine. Are there any silver linings?
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
When we got our home appraised, we felt robbed. Compared to a similar home right around the corner, our appraisal was $80,000 less.
Latino and Black homeowners are about twice as likely as white homeowners to get low appraisals. If you believe your home has been unfairly appraised because of race or national origin, contact HUD at hud.gov/fairhousing. That's hud.gov/fairhousing. Everyone has a right to fair housing. A public service message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News special report. President Trump has paused for a month new tariffs on Mexico and Canada. Simon Rabinovich at The Economist.
I think it still means that the tariffs are looming large over companies that rely on a cross-border manufacturing model, as many do. It's, I guess, a slight stay of execution, but still not great news.
The fears are coming from both sides of the political aisle, as Erica Brown reports.
Republican Senator Rand Paul says business leaders in his state are
are telling him tariffs will hurt their companies and the economy.
Another example from business reporter Jason Brooks.
Boeing CEO Kelly Ortberg told employees that the tariffs are turning into a supply issue that could prove really expensive for Boeing.
The president's reasoning for today's decision isn't clear.
Nothing to do with the market. I'm not even looking at the market because long term, the United States will be very strong with what's happening here.
The Dow plunged more than 400 points. This is CBS News Special Report.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. Daylight savings time starts this weekend. It happens on Sunday at 2 a.m. Brittany Merlot tells us more.
We spring forward and move the clocks 1 hour ahead. While that means extra light in the evening, it also means losing an hour of sleep. Doctors say children and teens are especially prone to health impacts of getting less sleep. And sleep's important for kids because it helps them learn in school, manage their emotions, and have faster response times. So families should plan ahead now. Adjust bedtime. Make it about 15 minutes earlier every day before the actual time changes.
The latest Marquette University Law School poll of Wisconsin voters finds divided views on President Donald Trump and billionaire Elon Musk. Trump's approval rating is at 48% approve to 51% disapprove among Wisconsin voters. This figure is slightly higher than when Trump first occupied the White House 8 years ago. In the March 2017 poll, Trump's approval was at 41% as compared to 47% disapprove. In this year's poll, Trump's support is worse with independents, where he polled with net positive ratings in 2017, but net negative ratings now. Charles Franklin, head of the Marquette poll.
The way the coalitions are split, the way the parties are aligned, and especially the way independents are, is a little different this time in starkly more partisan polarization.
The poll found that voters have a more negative view of Elon Musk, who has a 41% favorable to 53% unfavorable rating. Among independent voters, Musk fares even worse, with just 29% viewing him favorably to 58% unfavorable. The poll is among registered voters in Wisconsin and has a slight Republican lean in its sample. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
The Bucks dominate Dallas. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks beat the shorthanded Dallas Mavericks in Milwaukee by 30 points, 137 to 107. Damian Lillard with 34 points, Giannis with 32, now with a total 20,000 career points. Men's college basketball, the Marquette Golden Eagles battled but lost at UConn 72 to 66.